Good evening. My name is Dave, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And it's good to be here. I'm just going to share my experience, strength, and hope. I put up my before picture there. That was 1960s, and I came to OA. I weighed over 300 pounds, and actually, I weighed 298, but that's the last time I weighed myself when I had a contest with a guy named Bill in our shop, and there were 22 guys, and I bet Bill that he was fatter than I was. Only men would do something like this, by the way. I never heard of women have weight contests. And I lost by about 40 pounds. So that was part of my bottom. I just couldn't believe that I was bigger than Bill and weighed more than Bill did. So it was a stark reality. But that was one of the bottoms. And then I lived where it was warm, very warm, in Elko, out here in Elkhorn Valley, inland from San Diego. And it was El Cajon is the box, you know. And it was a box valley, so all the heat stayed in that valley. And so when you're 300 pounds and it's 100 degrees or 90 degrees, you're very uncomfortable, And I discovered cornstarch, and that I put between my legs so they wouldn't bleed, and from my skin rubbing together. And that was part of the humiliation. And I remember I'm a typical compulsive overeater, so if a little cornstarch is good, a whole lot of it's better. And so I loaded up on cornstarch, and my little 10-year-old daughter and I went to the store to buy something. I don't remember what it was. And we were clowning around the store, and she ran up behind me and hit me on the fanny. And there was just a big cloud of cornstarch, everywhere. So that was part of the embarrassment. I wrote out all these things that finally I needed to do something about my weight. And I went to work in Los Angeles when I was younger for a guy, and I worked in his racing shop. And he sent me to a diet doctor, Dr. Stanley Z. Gilbert, in Azusa, California. And he had rented a house in a community, in a neighborhood, and there was a line of women around the block. I never saw another man there. And they gave you a little bag of pills, and you took one before each meal to curb your appetite. And he gave you a water shot or whatever it was, and it I'd lost weight, and so I went down to see my mother, visit my mother down here in San Diego, and she said, "Sonny, how did you lose all that weight?" I said, "Well, I go to this doctor, and he gives me these little pills." And she says, "Let me take a look at those." And so she took a look at them, and she says, "Those aren't that's not good for me. That's amphetamine. Those aren't good for you." Well, I was really disappointed in my mother, because I thought she wasn't being very supportive, But of course, your mother is always right, and so she was right about that. So that worked for a while until I came back to San Diego and went out to the bowling alley where I hung out when I was a teenager. And I don't think I was—I think I was 19 years old or something, 20 years old. And there was a girl there that I used to be fond of, but I was always afraid to talk to her because I was, who'd want to talk to a fat guy named Porky? That was my nickname, Porky. And I would make a joke out of it, and I said, "Well, the price of pork—that's a compliment, ha ha ha, the jolly fat man deal." So I walked into the pool hall where all the kids hung out, and she was there, and she ran up and threw her arms around me and told me how handsome I was, and I didn't know what to say. I just froze up. And then I left as soon as I could and went to the Speedy Mart, which are now 7-Elevens. That's how long ago it was. And I got a bunch of food. I don't remember what I got, but I binged. So then the weights came back on. And then I got a job working for the government in this shop with all these guys. And they can't, they said, "Hey," and I, oh, I went to my healthcare provider because I got healthcare insurance when I got my government job. And I told the doctor, Dr. Mary Jane, and she's the doctor of internal medicine at Kaiser Permanente. And I said, "You know what? I got to do something about my weight. I'm getting tired of being fat, you know. And she said, "Well, sure. We just, you know, here, just follow this food plan, and come back and see me, you know, in a month, you know." And so I came back, and of course I lost about 14 pounds, you know, and like a lot of people know, that was mostly water. And I was really, you know, I could hardly wait to go back and see her again so she could be impressed with my weight loss, you know. And then the next time I don't I think I only lost 11 pounds or something, and then of course it went down, of course, after that. And it was a healthy way to lose weight, you know, but I was in a hurry. I've always been in a hurry. And first time we're gonna screw our potluck up by your stupid diet, you know. Just go back on it, go back on it, you know, Monday, you know. So I you know, I planned on doing that. So I've had a feast, and then of course Monday never came, you know, like a lot of us know about that. And I'm gonna close this browser because it says my internet's getting unstable. So there. Maybe that'll help. So anyway, you know, back to Dr. Mary Janian, and I'd heard about the stomach bypass surgery by that time. And I said, "Hey, I need to get that bypass surgery. You know, your diet didn't work." And she said, "Well, diet works if you use a little willpower, you know." And I said, "Well, there's something wrong with me because I talked to my wife about dinner at breakfast time, and I'm having a great big breakfast, and I eat all day long, I snack all day long in the vending machines and eating what other people aren't eating. They you know, say, "Hey, you want this, Dave?" You know, sure. So my favorite line was, "Are you going to finish that?" You know, and so that's where I come from. And anyway, that's a little bit about. And so she said, "Well, I don't think that you're a candidate for the bypass surgery. That's for people that are at risk, and you don't have high blood pressure yet, and you don't have congestive heart failure yet, or diabetes, you know." She followed it with a "yet," you know. And I said, "Well, then I need to see a psychiatrist, because anybody that eats like I do all day long, it's all I think about is food, and something wrong with me, you know. So I need to see a psychiatrist. Can you refer me to one that can help me?" And she says, "Well, I don't think you need a psychiatrist. I think what you need is a support group." And she says, "I know of two, Weight Watchers and Overeaters Anonymous." She says, "The only thing I know about them is one that costs money and the other one is free. So that's why you know me. I went to the free one, you know." And I went to my first meeting, and they said, I said, "Well, I got to get all that, you know, I got to get the, you know, what kind of classes we have here and all that stuff." "Oh, we don't have classes. What we do is you get a sponsor, you call in your food every day, you don't eat any sugar, flour, wheat, only coffee, tea, and low calorie drinks between meals. Work the assignments, read the big book, and, you know, do your assignments, and make three phone calls every day." That's what I did. And I've lost 130 pounds in, I don't know, somewhere around a little over a year. And I was flying high, you know, and I didn't tell anybody that I went to Overeaters Anonymous. I had the stigma. I didn't want anybody to know. It's anonymity, you know, none of your business, you know. And the guys would ask me where I go on Wednesday nights, and I lost all that weight going to one meeting a week, you know, and amazingly so. And the guy said, "Where are you at on Wednesday night? You're not smoking pot with us anymore." And I go, "Well, I go to this meeting." "What kind of meeting?" "Oh, it's a bunch of people there." What's it about?" I said, "Oh, we talk, you know." "What do you talk about?" "Well, we just talk about different things." "Well, after people ask you these questions, you don't get an answer, they just say, 'How the hell with you,' you know, and they quit asking you questions." So that's how I got around that, you know. So that's how I got here. And how I stayed here is a man finally came to the meeting. You know, they said, "Hey, there's a man coming to the meeting named Bill." You know, it wasn't Bill Wilson or anybody like that. He was in the Navy, and he came up to me, and he handed me a big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, "I'm going to give you this book. You'll probably never read it, but I listened to you. And but it, you know, think about reading it, you know. And I, my opinion at the time was, I'm not an alcoholic. Why should I read an alcohol? Thank you very much. Why should I read the alcoholic book? Was that the first 5 minutes? I guess so. No, it's the second 5 minutes. Okay, see, I go on and on. So, you know, that's been my journey. Is I finally was, you know, like I was telling somebody the other day, you know, a guy I used to sponsor who died of this disease at 55 years old in his sleep with a CPAP machine on with diabetes, and he had congestive heart failure. He never told me that, but he was the sweetest guy you'd ever want to meet. And I used to tell him he weighed 400 pounds. I said, you know, Johnny, your problem isn't that you weigh 400 pounds. Your problem is when that weight comes off of you, that's when the shit hits the fan. Pardon my French. Because that's what happened to me. I didn't know who I was. You know, I thought the weight loss was going to make me happy, and it didn't. I still had all the baggage. So I think the journey that I'm on has been a progressive one that has taken me through all kinds of inventory work. And I got to be on the retreat committee for about 9 years, and we had retreats every 2 months. So I got to hear some really great retreat leaders. Currently I'm the coordinator with my friend Gene on the Southern California men's retreats, and we have two men's retreats a year. And we had 35 guys the last one, really great. And so I'm still doing retreats, and I just about everything, because I was taught by sponsors. I've had some very good sponsors that directed me and guided me and mentored me. And two of them passed away, and I have a new sponsor now. And you know, they so I've been the chairperson of the intergroup. You know, I followed the people around when I came in here that were successful, because I wanted to be successful at this program. And they were all involved in stuff. They were either I mean, they were involved. You'd seen them at the intergroup meetings. They were at the retreat. They were the ones rolling up their sleeves and doing the stuff. You know, it's still the same way. And I said, well, I want to recover. You know, so they like me, and they let me hang around with them. So, and I still a lot of them that are still alive are still friends of mine. You know, and I went and visited a lady the other day. She's in a home over here. She's got Alzheimer's. But, you know, she only remembers people from a long time ago. So she remembers me. So we had a wonderful conversation about, we talked about the old times and everything. She's a grand lady. She's got about 50 something years of abstinence. I've known her for 40 odd, you know, at least 47 of those years. Anyway, so, you know, what I do today is, you know, I get up every morning and I go to a 6:45 phone meeting. But the first thing I do is I sit down and I read my meditation, pardon me, ladies, on the toilet, because it's got my attention. And I read it, and if it doesn't hit me, and I've read it and I say, well, what did I just read? I read it again. Sometimes I have to read it three times, but you know, more normally I get it the first time, you know. Then I go on, I put on my back here in my bathroom, I got my shoes and my sneakers and all my gear to go for a walk, my fanny pack and my dog biscuits and all the stuff I take a walk with. I don't eat the dog biscuits, like for the dog. But so that's what I do every day. I go on a long walk, you know, about 3 hours, about not 3 hours, about 3 miles, sometimes 5, 6 miles. And then I come home, and I, you know, fix my abstinent breakfast. And I either get on the 9:30 meetings, and in between I take phone calls. I sponsor a lot of people. You know, I learned that when I came in. You know, not going to make it unless you sponsor people. It's still true today. And you know, when I get a request to speak at one of these meetings, I do that. You know, and was it Sunday night, Saturday night, that somebody asked me to help with the internet, you know, this internet security. So I did that, you know, and sit back here, and I just kept my mouth shut and did, you know, did what they asked me to do. So I've been involved in a lot of the really great service projects with really a lot of great people. Yeah. And but I don't really have time to tell you about them all, but But that's what they told me. This is what keeps you in the program. So my phone rings all day long, with the guys I sponsor. I'm sponsoring mostly men, but I do sponsor some women. When I came in, if you sponsor, you had to sponsor women because there was no men around in the 70s. Life is good. I'll be if everything if the creeks don't rise, I'll be 80 years old next May, and that's because of this program. That's time is up. I'm abstinent today. The last thing I'll say, by the grace of God, and I had to look that word up to see what it meant, because I go to a lot of book studies, and grace is a free, unmerited, unwarranted gift that's unearned. You can't earn it. It's a gift. And it's 23 times in the AA 12 and 12, it mentions the alcoholics mentioned that they were sober only by the grace of God. So that's, I'm that way with the food. So I don't have the food obsession today. I have had a good day. I have one more meal to go after this meeting. And I'm done. So thank you.